Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
This week on Meet and Three, we celebrate Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month with an episode about memory.
I've always read and sort of approached cookbooks for more than the recipes. To me, they are full of narrative content and narrative value.
So Malama Aina basically means to take care of the land. For us as Hawaiians, it's taking care of our older sibling.
But I do remember like definitely feeling like self-conscious about it, like being the only one who kind of wasn't eating a sandwich and like didn't have a bag of goldfish or Lunchables.
Listen to Meet and Three wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, this is Lisa Held, and you're listening to The Farm Report, a Heritage Radio Network show about the people, processes, and policies that shape how food is produced today. Today's guest is Tyran Lewis, the founder, farmer, and CEO behind Heru Urban Farming in St. Louis, Missouri. Tyran is on a mission to grow healthy, sustainable food for food apartheid communities in St. Louis, and we're going to be talking about why he chose that path and how he's making it happen on the ground. Tyran, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, happy to have you here. So I read that you are a fifth-generation farmer. Let's start with that. Tell me a little bit about your family's farm history.
Oh, wow. So the cool thing about it is when I first started farming, I went to a family reunion in 2018. I knew my family was farmers, you know, of course, sharecroppers and before then farmers, but I didn't know to what extent. So when I went to my family reunion down in Paris, Texas, and they had news articles and everything, I found out that my great uncle, a Minor Washington, he was a part of an all-black co-op back in 1939.
Wow.
That's back in Lamar County in Paris, Texas. And they purchased over, I think it was 24 acres. And all they grew was tomatoes. And, you know, and that's what they did. So that was cool. And then from 1950 to 52, my great uncle, Minor Washington, his son, Ernest Washington, they was winning first and second place in everything at the State Fair. They was winning stuff in a popcorn, a purple hull peas, crowder peas, a lot of other peas and beans, and I think they really love growing peas and beans because, you know, in the article, right, it just shows that, you know, and watermelon as well. And watermelon is my favorite crop, so that's cool.
That's amazing. So, but you didn't grow up on a farm, right?
Oh, no, I grew up in St. Louis right here.
Okay. So then how did you get back into it? What made you want to start farming?
Wow, man. So, you know, I was always in, you know, my great-grandma, she had stuff in our backyard and stuff like that. So I always was kind of consciously aware of it. I grew food like in buckets and things of that nature. But when I really got into my craft, it was an unusual journey because I started off being a PE teacher and a health teacher. I actually taught in the St. Louis Public School District for 6 years and probably accumulation of at least 12 years just teaching experience. We're going to put together the substitute teaching and everything. Then after that, I got my master's in management, and I was actually the GM at this local car wash called Blue Iguana. Now they got like six or seven of them now in St. Louis, but I was the first one at the first one that built. Also was assistant GM at Five Guys on Lindell. You know, a lot of stuff I came across, they said I was either overqualified, not enough experience. You know, when you're getting your master's at age 30, you know, everybody wanted me to do interns and stuff. So then I got the farming because I used to be vegan at one point in time. This was back in like 2017. I was basically looking for some fresh produce. I usually go to the farmers markets and things of that nature, but I wanted to go to my local grocery store in my community. which I was fortunate enough to have one close to me. So okay. I went to the one that was on Natural Bridge in Union, went in there. I wasn't really happy with what I saw. So I said, okay, let me go to Lindell. So I went there, same chain, went in there. It was better. Quite not what I expected, but it was better. Way better than where I was okay. at. So I went to the one on Clayton. So I'll tell you, I turned to a field trip. Went to one in Clayton. I was like, wow. Man, they had abundance of fresh produce everywhere. You know, you could go in there blindfold and just stick your hands out and pick up something and you'll find something, you know.
Right.
It's no brain surgery for that. So then I took one more step. I went to West County. Now, and I went to West County in this structure. First of all, the structure of the grocery store was totally designed different. That's number one. I didn't know okay. I was walking into that chain. Then I walked in. I seen people cooking sushi. You got a winery and all this stuff that same grocery store didn't have in my neighborhood. So I told myself, you know what? I want to do something about it. And I did. And that's basically how I got into it. You know, I started growing food for myself. I got a garden lease on LRA property in the city of St. Louis, which you can rent land for $5 for 5 years, as long as you grow food on it.
Wow.
So I did that. And I was growing for my family. So the community started talking to me. This is 2018 now.
Okay.
The community started talking to me, asking me questions. Now, mind you, I've been over there since 2015, over here, rather, since 2015. No one said anything to me, you know. So then people started talking to me. So I'm like, okay, people talking to me, intrigued. So I told myself, you know what, this is like a supply and demand thing. The demand is here. You need a supply. So why can't I be that person? That's what I started with. So in 2018, I started with 10,000 square feet. Now I have an accumulation of 4 acres amongst 3 properties. So yeah, that's basically how I started. The need was there. I saw my people need it. And we do live in a food desert, you know, and I call it food apartheid because I think it's deliberately done. You know, they deliberately put all these gas stations on every corner, Dollar Generals, Family Dollar, stuff with low value to bring the property value down. You go to a gas station, you might get lucky to find a banana or orange at the cash register, but there's a lot of processed food, things you got to put in the microwave, frozen stuff, and that's what we eating. I mean, that's, you know, in the city of St. Louis, including where I stay, over 700,000 people don't have a sustainable, healthy produce within a half mile of their neighborhood. You know,
Wow. Our
food here comes from over 12,000 miles away. You know, 85% of the food grown in Missouri is used for animal feed and food processing. So less than 1% is used for us to eat. And that's sad, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it makes it really clear that the term food apartheid is so important versus food desert. In the way you explained the fact that there is a grocery store in your neighborhood that you went to and there's food there, but it was bad food compared to good food, right?
Yeah.
Like that's kind of crazy that like there is an intentional difference between the food that is being sold at, was it the same chain?
Same chain. I've been saying their name. I ain't gonna say it. But same chain. It's funny because I'm just one of the lucky ones to have one close to me. But it's a plethora of people in the North City, West Side don't have none. And even there. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, the same chain was pulling grocery stores from those neighborhoods. So, you know, you got to look at it like that, too.
Yeah, absolutely. So you started growing food. You're growing on 4 acres now, 3 different plots. That's pretty serious. How did you acquire the skills you needed? How did you learn to do what you're doing?
Yeah. So believe it or not, when I first started, it was all natural. You know, I was just doing stuff, man. I was calling my family members. They was giving me tips. And a lot of farmers I talked to, they called me a natural. They were like, man, like everything you touch just grow. And I just think that's just my ancestors, you know, it's in my bloodline. And I really believe that, you know, I also my whole energy from them too. To help me out when I need help, you know. So I have a spiritual aspect to it as well. But, of course, I took classes along the way. You got to tighten up your skills. So I took permaculture classes. I took herbalism classes, things of that nature. So I am honing my skills at the same time. But a lot of stuff comes trial and error, and I just naturally know it. And like I say, I bring in the energy of my ancestors. So we do something in my community where we pour libations. So when you pour libations, that's like paying homage to your ancestors. And when you pour some water or whatever into something that's growing, like the dirt, the soil, or some plants, then you just call their name and you channel them in, You know, in the hood, they might call it pouring out some liquor for your homies, you know, for your dead people that passed. Same thing. It's just same energy, just different concept, right?
So, a spiritual practice.
There you go.
Yeah. So tell me about what you grow.
Oh, man. So I grow a lot of vegetables and fruit. I grow things from, of course, your traditional tomatoes, cucumbers, you know, peppers, things of that nature, onions, garlic. But I also grow cantaloupe. Watermelon is my favorite crop. That's my cash crop right there. I love watermelon. I grow a lot of Asian greens. So I like throwing stuff different. They introduce to my community. So I grow things like tatsoi, bok choy, stuff I can't pronounce, like chimachi, I think that's what you say. what else? Even as small as zucchini. I didn't grow up eating zucchini, you know, eggplants. Mm. So even that type of stuff, too. I also got like seven different varieties of lettuces, like Little Jim, Butter Crunch, Utacool, and different things like that. They all got different tastes, different flavors. And one thing I like doing, it's always a misconception that vegetables are nasty or something like that. But this is about, first of all, who's growing it, is it organic or not, and then how to prepare it. I really think, you know, just introducing new stuff and just, you got to know how to cook it, you know, and if somebody show you how to cook it, you know, and that'll make it better too. But, you know, and it's always a misconception saying that black people not farmers. I mean, we were sharecroppers. Even before sharecroppers, we was farmers. So I just like me being a black male that people could see me and see me growing food and know that, you know, that is something that we do, you know.
Yeah. Are there other urban farms in St. Louis? Like, is there a community of people, or are you pretty much out there doing what you do on your own?
Oh, yeah. You know, I pay homage to the people that came before me. So it's definitely other urban farmers in the community. You got Ujima. You got Evolve. That's a nonprofit community. You got High School Foods. You got Bowling Family Farms. And a lot of people that I know their names, but not their farm names, but like Tia. You got the East Side. You know, we got people over there. So it's people here, you know, just getting the attention. And I think COVID, if it didn't do anything, it did shine light on the food system and things of that nature. And people really paying attention to local urban farmers. So I think a little blessing came out of that, you know. People paying attention, people being more consciously aware of the discrepancies between food and between communities. Yep.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this ad.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. And of course, there's the 2 Michelin-starred Blanca tucked away in the garden for truly daring diners. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
All right, we're back. This is Lisa Held. You're listening to The Farm Report on Heritage Radio Network. I'm talking to Tyran Lewis from Heru Urban Farming in St. Louis. So we talked about the food that you grow, all the different vegetables and watermelon, and where does it all end up? Like, who is eating it?
Oh, wow. So I get my product out in a variety of ways. The one thing I do is CSAs. So that stands for Community Supported Agriculture. So basically it's a food subscription. I just started doing that last year. I mean, the pandemic came. I wasn't even doing CSAs. That was actually something I was trying to avoid, to be honest with you. And then the opportunity came, you know. A lot of people was in their houses and doing stuff like that. So I did. I had CSA, started last year, went well, kind of overwhelmed. I mean, I had 20 deliveries. This year only got 4 deliveries. Mostly everybody pick up. But I had to do that because a lot of people didn't want to leave their house. But that happened. So, but the cool thing about my, well, food subscription, basically what it is a lot of farmers liked it because it's upfront money. People pay that upfront, you know, and get in the season, get us started. And then, mine is 12 weeks. So every Friday you get accumulation of everything that I harvest. It'd be in like a mesh bag, like a grocery store mesh bag that you get. And I pack that on up and I do it like that. But the cool thing about mine is every 5 CSAs I sell, I donate to a family in need. So last year I had 10 families. This year I got 15 families. Nice. Then I'm feeding possibly maybe 20. I got to see what's going on first, but I know I got 15 for sure. I'm not going to start that till June. That's when most of my crops come. So I ain't want to start that in May. So that'd be coming June. So I'm happy about that. But also this is my first year at a farmer's market, and I'm actually at the farmer's market on the north side. The first of its kind, is in Hyde Park on 2027 Salisbury. And I'll be there on Saturdays, 10 to 2. So I've been there for 2 weeks now. I didn't go last week. I had something to do, but pretty much there every week, every Saturday. So come on out, support. I think that's a good look for the north side. I also sell to local small businesses if I have something left over. You know, if I have some extra stuff, I sell to them. I sell some stuff to the North Sarah Food Hub as well. And they fed over 250,000 families last year during COVID. So I do that. I do some, I don't want to say it on radio. I do some hand to hand, but not really. I don't want to be pulling up on the phone to buy stuff. But, I know some I sell. You know, I'm not going to turn you away. You know, I get a lot of that. People see me outside, just pull up. Like, hey, you got something like this? I'm like, yeah, I got you. So, yeah, so come on. Yeah.
Mm. Well, I want to ask you about, you know, your mission is about growing food in communities that don't have access to a lot of good food, right? Mm-hmm. And but growing food the way you're doing it is more expensive than doing it commodity scale, right? Out in the country where land is cheap and you're growing a ton of stuff at once. So how do you balance, how do you make the economics work if it's more expensive to do what you do, but you're trying to keep prices down for the people that you want to feed?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's like, you know, everything like you say is balanced, you know. I had a unique opportunity. I started off, all my capital came off of grants and accelerators. Mm. So when I first started, I was trying to, this is 2018, I was thinking, well, 17, that's when I was manifesting. But I was like, how can I get this going? And to be honest with you, I manifest everything. Like, when I mean manifestation, I meditated on it. I pictured how the wind's going to feel and the hair on my arm. I went down to that minute detail. And I just been blessed, man. The first accelerator I was involved with was the Balsa Foundation. That was cool for the stage I was in at that moment because it was for startups, and I was just coming off the porch, so to say. And it helped me out. Got some money from them, you know. Also got that first grant was $1,000. Then I had a follow-up grant that I got $5,000 from them. And then after that, I went to WePower. That was last year. That was a cool accelerator. That was the first time accelerator for Black and Latino entrepreneurs, and I was a part of that. I was a blessing. I was one of the 10 companies in that, and they gave me grant money. They helped me out, you know, get my stuff in order, and they came at the right time, right? So then I was in this past accelerator. It was the UMSL DEI accelerator, where they gave me $50,000 grant. And, that helped me out as well. Then outside of those three accelerators, I had grants that I was just writing. My first grant I wrote was Balsa. I was one for one. That gave my confidence. I was looking for writers and things of that nature. My girlfriend at the time, she was like, man, you got your master's degree. I think you could be able to write a grant. And that's what I did. So right
that's
now,
amazing.
I think I'm like 7 for 10, 8 for 11, something like that on grant writing. So that's cool. I just been a good opportunity for me. And all those grants gave me the opportunity to, like I say, get the equipment and stuff I need to work efficiently. I hired a worker this past year with the $50,000. I got me actually worker I paid. Slate, so I use my resources. Slate, I'm allotted 10 workers through Slate, and they pay for them. So Slate stands for St.
What
Louis.
What is that? Okay.
St. Louis Agency for Training and Unemployment. Yeah. So that's for ages 17 to 27.
Oh, wow.
So I got two supervisors. I'm considered a supervisor and my worker that I pay out of my pocket. So we get five workers per us. So far we got one, two, three, four. We got four now. And we got some more that's coming because school is out. So that'd be helping me out with my workers. I also utilize volunteers. You know, like I said, I got certain stuff that I do. So I do give out food too, but at the same time, my CSA customers is more for my suburb people, to be honest with you. Them my top customers on that. That's an upfront chunk, right? So I use that to motivate that. Like I say, every five, I give a family in need, right?
Right. Subsidize the other.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. And then whatever I got left, then I also do, we feed the unhoused every month in different micro pockets of unhoused communities within communities, right? So we do that as well. Also, you know, I got something I'm doing Wednesday for Berkeley Elementary School. I'm going in there and we can do a taste test. I did a Zoom with them a couple weeks ago. We're going to do a taste test so they can taste all the different varieties of lettuces, the Asian greens I have, to get them acclimated to eating those type of things and getting their palate test, you know. So I do a lot of that type of stuff too, just outreach stuff and stuff, things of that nature. I mean, you know, people highlighting all that stuff, that's just something I like to do. I mean, you know, I was always involved in those type of outreach programs when I was a kid, and I had some mentors to help me out. So I figured that I'm just paying my dues, you know.
And the SLATE program you mentioned, that's pretty interesting. So are those local young people that you're training them on with like farm skills?
Yeah, for sure. Right? For sure. Train them, mentoring them. Most of them workers are handpicked. I mean, I send them to them like, hey, you want to work for me? Go down there and talk to them. So I can really send them that way. One of the kids that worked for me, he's actually a resident at the Covenant House. He actually worked with me last year, too. So that's cool, you know. But he was just,
what's,
you know,
the Covenant House for people who aren't in
St. I'm sorry. Covenant House is a homeless shelter for young adults, ages Got 15 it. To 22. Actually, I actually used to work there, matter of fact. I worked there when I was teaching. So I was working there overnight and teaching and coaching. Yeah. So I'm tied with them. Yeah, one of my little cousins, and then the rest of the people. I got one that was volunteering through Missouri Botanical Garden. She was helping me, and then she saw what I was doing. She was like, oh, can I work for you too? And I'm like, yeah, come on. So, so that helped out a lot to get those workers, especially to stay paying for them, and I'm not. So that's really dope. So, I just try to use, it's just resources and networking, to be for real. I think I got favor from the universe and my ancestors, to be honest with you. Yep.
Yeah. Do those young people that are working with you, that you're training, do you see them continuing in agriculture? Like, are any of them really interested in what you do? And could you see them carrying on with it in their futures?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, my little cousin, it's like his first job, so he already got little side hustles, man. He got the elderly, some of his neighbors were his grandma's house, already asking him to come and, can you do my garden too? You do my things?
Nice.
Yeah, so he was like, oh man, I got jobs, man. Can I wear your shirt? Y'all have your body. Like, yeah, maybe some side buddy. So he got a little hustle going on already. So I might say continue with the farming thing. That's another young lady. I think she want to like do stuff at her house, but I like just the growth. So so the kid that's at Covenant House, me and him been talking, man, I've been seeing him improve. We can have deep conversations and we just talk about, like, you know, God stuff, you know, life stuff. Now I take that out of anything, you know. And then farming is therapeutic anyway. So we all having this. So I guess they talking to the therapist and they being a therapist for me too. So it's all good, you know. I really think, you know, that just brings that type of conversation up, you know, when you bring your hand through the soil and you relax. And all that. So I just like the rapport that I'm building with them, really, and the relationships we're building and just knowing that, you know, you got somebody that you can talk to. So, you know, even they want to be farmers or not, of course, they can just grow a little bit for themselves. That's cool, too. But I just want to see their growth, to be honest with you.
Right. Right. Yeah. So what does growth look like for Heru Urban Farming? Like, what's your long term goal?
Oh, man. So my long-term goal is to have my own homestead, you know. What I mean by homestead is I want me a house on my farm, on my property. I get about 50 acres. I still grow, do my thing with my watermelon, my veggies, and my fruit. But I also, I have some livestock. I have some goat, some chickens, some sheep. I don't know if I do cow, but I know I do those three. Bees, of course. I got some bees now, actually. Some bees. Have a resort, or retreat. That's what I'm looking for. A retreat type of feel, you know. So you come up there, you get your spiritual yoga going on, you get your massage, you get your Reiki, you know, then you get the pick from my nursery where I got all my fruit trees and stuff, and that type of feel. Man, if I can get a pine on there and stock it up, then I have the fishing events with the kids coming out, have it to a whole little field day type of relaxation type of thing. That'd be ideal for me. And no, that's where I tap out at. And hopefully in this term called food apartheid, at least here in this region and keep it, and, you know, and keep it going.
Yeah. I was going to ask, like, you know, I was actually surprised by that answer because you're so focused on urban farming and, but eventually you want to get out and have a bigger space. And, how would you maintain that? Do you think you could maintain that connection to like the urban communities you're serving?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. I've been saying, I'm so St. Louis. I'm good. I mean, I still come back. I mean, I'm just cause I need the space just to grow the food. You know, I still bring it in and do what I do still. Oh yeah, that's all there. I don't want to go too far out. You know, I'll go wherever the universe put me, but you know, I don't go too far out. Hopefully, roughly with less than 100 miles out. That'd be cool.
Right. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Tyran, thank you so much for coming on the show and talking about Heru urban farming. If people want to find you, where should they go online?
I'm Heru urban farming on all social media outlets. That's Facebook and Instagram and my email, which is Gmail, and my website. Everything is Heru urban farming, HERU URBAN. FARMING. That's A Urban Farming. All that. If you want to donate to my organization, that's also at Heru Urban Farming on Venmo and Cash App and PayPal.
Great. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate it. Gratitude.
Thank you all so much for listening to the Farm Report on Heritage Radio Network. If you enjoyed the conversation, please subscribe to the podcast, rate it, and share it. Until next time, this is Lisa Held. The Farm Report is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Just enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.